Hello, Paul. Hello. It is I, your very good friend and confidant, Dr. Herfenstörfner. How are you this week, my friend?
I'm good, Dr. Hurley-Burley. Yeah. Well, I'm not really good. I'm just worried about my friends. I feel like I can't trust them. I feel like they're just waiting to betray me. I'm worried that they belong to an ancient android cult.
That's... You need yourself some new friends, my friend. Right now.
You think? Hello and welcome to DC OCD, the DC Events podcast, and we are making our way through all the DC events in order, and today we're up to Millennium from 1987. But in the interim, there were a couple of significant comics, which we would classify as not an event, and the first one that's quite a big deal is Batman Year One. It's four issues in the Batman comic, just telling the origin of Batman, and it's a bit of a story that stuck. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. And the other little story that came out in the interim is one called Watchmen. Watchmen.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think that will ever tie into the DC universe in any way at all.
Never, never. It's never. Far too removed.
Anyway, so Millennium, Mike, who's responsible for Millennium?
Oh, well... We had Steve Englehart writing it. We had art by Joe Staton, Ian Gibson, Bruce Patterson. Carl Gafford was on the colors. Bob Lappin did the letters. And Bob, I think it's Kahan, did the edits.
Khan? I'd say Kahan.
Kahan? Okay, Bob Kahan. He was
Khan?
The editor. Well, I'm feeling a bit like that.
Yes, so this was an 8-issue miniseries, came out in 1987, and it was weekly. Weekly. Mm.
Bit of a change.
Fairly difficult to do. And it did this weird thing where it would have the chapter, you'd read the chapter, and then it would sort of hand the plot off to issues. So if you want to read what happens next, and it was a very direct handoff in some cases.
Very much so. Yes.
So Millennium, there were 37 tie-in issues to this one. There was a fair bit of Firestorm, The Flash, Outsiders, Wonder Woman, Batman, Blue Beetle, Legion of Superheroes. Legion of Superheroes, that's just dumb. Sorry. Secret Origins, Superman, Young All-Stars, Adventures of Superman, Booster Gold, Green Lantern Corps, Infinity Inc., Teen Titans, Spotlight, not even the main Teen Titans book, Action Comics, Captain Atom, Detective Comics, Suicide Squad, cool, The Spectre, and Justice League International. What did you think of this, Mike?
Well, shall we describe it first? Let me describe it, please.
Okay.
So, in summary, Millennium is about a guardian of Oa named Harupa Hando Hu and a Zamoron named Nadia Sophia. They've decided that they're going to help humanity reach the next stage of evolution by enhancing 10 specially selected people. However, the android manhunters and the acolytes learn of this plan and decide to disrupt the entire affair.
Wow.
Do you think that's a fair call?
That is a fair call, but it doesn't really capture what it's like to experience Millennium.
I tried to remain emotion-free. Is that a recap?
Yeah.
Because there's going to be some emotion in a minute. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I particularly like the bit where it says that the Guardians and the Zamorans were away doing it.
Yeah, a little bit of sexual misdirection in the very first issue. Yeah, page 16. Harupa mentions that the crisis reduced the Guardians' number to 22, so they, along with Zamorans, decided to see if the state between male and female could be renewed. And so they left this universe then in all caps, to do it. When I first read that, I was like, so Millennium's about them getting it on and having a kid. But thankfully, a few panels later, they actually clarified that, no, we're going to find 10 people to then get it on and create the next generation of immortals. It was a little bit vague.
Oh, well, I thought they definitely did it.
Oh, they probably did. Yeah, it's like, I mean, what?
Yeah. But, yeah, good golly. I mean, yeah, one of the setups for this is the character Harbinger from the Crisis on Infinite Earths. She jotted down some thoughts about the history of the DC Universe in a book called The History of the DC Universe, mm-hmm. which DC also published, which was written by Wolfman and Perez. And with lovely painted art throughout. And she sent it off into space, because that's what you do with books that you write, apparently. Mm-hmm. That's why no one's read my books. They're all in space.
right.
But it was intercepted by the invisible planet belonging to the Manhunters. And they read the history of the DC Universe, somehow. Mm-hmm. They seeded themselves in the private lives of all these heroes and characters, and et cetera. And... this is one of the first things where I think Millennium really wimps out. Was it's like the Manhunters were, their agents were either someone fairly insignificant or they were an android pretending to be someone significant.
Yeah.
So if you're an android and you want to take over, say, Commissioner Gordon's life and infiltrate Batman's life, what would you do? You would perhaps kill Commissioner Gordon?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, not in this case, no. They just kidnapping,
right?
So yeah, that is the first strike against Millennium. Is, you know, it's a bit it wusses out at a key moment when saying, okay, this person is going to betray Superman. This person is going to betray Batman. You know, the really close to the continuity people, the people who've been around for ages, not really. They're just android replacements.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now, I have to ask, was that whole thing, was any of that hinted at in the regular books before Millennium?
No.
Right, okay. So I'm quite justified in my feelings that the entire Manhunter's plot seems very tacked on.
Yeah, so the house ads for Millennium said, you know, one of these people has waited, you know, 10,000 years to betray the heroes, and it had pictures of different characters like... Lana Lang, etc. And the Superman tie-ins were particularly weird at this point. So there was like a whole conspiracy in Smallville of Manhunter agents.
Mm-hmm.
None of it was ever mentioned again. Yeah.
Thank God.
So, Mike, hit me with your big deals.
Okay, well, my idiot of the event award goes to Harbinger. For shooting off all her notes into outer space. Because why? Why would you do that? And then act so shocked that, oh my goodness, someone found them, intercepted them, read them, and is now using that information for evil purposes. Right. Why? Really? What else was there? I really felt like not having the tie-in issues for this one made my enjoyment of this series suffer. Because, as you said, it does a lot of handoff to the tie-ins between issues of the main one. And I just felt I was missing out on a lot.
Right.
Yes. Another thing, I don't get the titling for the parts. Okay, like on the cover of issue one, it says The Arrival. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, something's going to arrive. Oh, I'm going to open up and dive in. And then inside, it says Millennium Week 1, over. Like, what? Okay, maybe there's a theme. Okay, I'll look at the cover of Millennium Issue 2, The Summoning. Oh, okay, something's getting summoned. Ooh, have a look in. Inside, first page, Millennium Week 2, under. Right. Over, under, back, forth. Oh, okay. It doesn't mean anything. It's just, I thought, okay, maybe it's going to get into some big grand scheme or some big theory that we're going to learn about. But no. No, it doesn't do that at all. Because then in the final part, the Ascension on the cover, inside it's called The Rising and Advancing of Ten Spirits. So no, no, it doesn't even tie into some bizarre theory. Which we get to read about in part five, The Teaching. Which
The Teaching, yes. The Teaching is a very special chapter, isn't it?
It hurts my brain just trying to even remember what The Teaching was about. Basically, it's about the universe and creation and logic and reality, and I literally dozed off and got bored with that issue. I literally woke up with the comic on my chest. I went, oh. It. In case it's not apparent, I'm not a fan of this event. I'm really not.
What?
But I must thank you because, Paul, you very kindly gifted me all 8 issues of this, so I do appreciate that. I feel a much more complete DC fan, as you said previously, for having read this. I've seen the highest highs, and now I'm at the lowest millenniums.
So, can we just share a little bit of The Teaching? So basically, the Guardian, the Zamoran, whose names are very silly and I forget them, they just start saying things about numbers throughout the issue. So this is an excerpt. 2, the concept of other. 1 exists and seems all-encompassing at first to itself, but the logical sequence of time soon shows itself that 1 actually exists within its surroundings. Before 1's burst forth, these surroundings were nothing, but after 1, they are all that 1 is not. The second concept, 2. Etc.
My turn. Next comes the number 3. 1 becomes aware of 2 because of the relationship between them. This relationship is shaped by both, and thus is different from each, and so a new concept comes from their sum. But, not being born directly from the primal nothingness dependent upon higher forces for its very existence, 3 is inherently limited, Paul.
But just as 2 is all that 1 is not, so is 4 the reverse of 3. The nature of nature is sequence, and the limitations of 3 cannot be the end. The very nature of nature itself demands another creation. The nature of life demands the number 4. We could go on.
We could, but we won't. But
we don't want to blow too many minds tonight.
Paul and I were texting about this earlier, and he asked me about what I thought about The Teaching issue, and I just said my brain collapsed. Look, I get they're trying to do this grand, big scheme, big plan, big universal concept thing, but it's so boring and rambling and uninteresting.
Right. Oh, dear.
I did like about it, though, was the diverse mix of the people that had been selected to get enhanced. You've got like a gay Peruvian man, an Aboriginal woman, a racist Afrikaner, a Jamaican woman from fascist Britain. It actually calls Britain fascist on page 15 of issue 2, which was interesting. An Iranian woman, Japanese man, a Chinese woman, Jason Woodrue, the Floronic man, is in there. And good old Tom Kamalku. You know, why not?
Yeah. What's his nickname again?
Pie Face.
Yeah.
We're doing really well, and then, step backwards. So, so it's a really mixed bag. I think it all goes downhill from The Teaching onwards. The Manhunter's threat just seems really tacked on. It's like Englehart was like, I need some bad guys. What are the Manhunters doing? There we go.
Yeah. So Steve was writing Green Lantern Corps at the time, and this sort of spun out of that. And it's, you know, quite a compact story, I guess, because it really could be a Green Lantern story, and it's just sort of been blown out a bit to encompass the DC universe. But, I mean, some of the... One thing that really stood out for me was one of the biggest villains in the series is Nancy Reagan.
Yep.
Yeah, and she's sort of in the background of the actual miniseries, but if you read the tie-ins, you see that Nancy Reagan is basically a manhunter, a full-on manhunter, pulling the strings. So, you know, it's good to have a little bit of political commentary.
Yeah, why not?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I'll say some of the things that I like about it, because that'll be quicker than, there'll be more to that than you saying it. There is some pretty good crossover tie-ins to this series, and one of them involves all this happening in the Louisiana swamp. Mm-hmm. Between, I think it's after Millennium 4 and leading into Millennium 5, where basically Firestorm, Captain Atom, Batman in Detective Comics, and the Suicide Squad all end up in the swamp together at
yes.
different points. And it's a really good little four-part tie-in, and mm-hmm. it works really well. So Firestorm's just had a sort of memory wipe, and Ronnie Raymond's personality has sort of been cleared out, and mm-hmm. this is what they call the blank slate era, where Firestorm was basically an open book to be interpreted and directed by people, and sort of Captain Atom sort of helps him make the right decisions in the swamp, and a key character in the Suicide Squad dies in Detective Comics instead of Suicide Squad.
Right.
Yeah, and the Spectre's involved as well, doing a sort of spiritual attack on the Manhunters at the same time. So, yeah, that one is a really nice little grouping of issues, and that's about the highlight for me.
Right. Yeah. So what you're saying is I would have enjoyed the tie-ins more than the main series.
Probably would.
Yeah.
But I love DC books at this time because, you know, Ronnie Reagan was in this book almost as much as Batman in the DC universe. Like, you know, it's a non-stop Reagan in the early events, isn't it?
Yes.
He's in
yes.
Legends, he's in Millennium. You know.
Yeah. It was kind of yeah. cool to see. A nice little historical point there. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. Anyway, what did this series change?
Well, it gave us a new series.
It did. The New Guardians spun out of this, which I wouldn't call it a successful series.
It ran for 12 issues, Paul.
It ran for 12 issues. Steve Englehart didn't even stay on it.
Oh, wow. Should we tell them about Snowflame?
Go ahead.
Snowflame was a supervillain who appeared in the second issue of the New Guardians, and they gained their superpowers from the use of cocaine.
Hey!
Just say no, kids. Just say no.
Lots of people in the 80s gained their powers from cocaine.
Well played. Well played.
Now, there was another book that spun out of this, which was probably a bit more successful than the New Guardians. That was the Manhunter book. Yeah, Mark Shaw Manhunter, he came out of this with a new purpose, and that was to basically recruit villains for the Suicide Squad.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, it went for 24 issues, and I think probably the first dozen are pretty good,
okay.
from what I remember. Yeah. But, yeah, Nort, you know, the dog Greenlan?
Yes.
He debuted in Millennium in the Justice League International. Oh. But apart from that, it's slim pickings for highlights and things that lasted out of this one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so as we do every time we do one of these, we will rate the event and we will rate it on four categories. So, Mike, why don't you take us into the first category? Eventiness.
Oh, my goodness. I am going to give Millennium a 3. It was an event. It had an effect on the DCU at the time, but it's not a particularly good event.
3.
What about you, Paul?
I'm going to be a little more generous. I'm going to factor in the fact that this is a fairly complex event and it was pretty well run. You know, doing a weekly is fairly intimidating, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And it had some good times. You know, I particularly like that four-part swampy one. So I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay.
And that brings us to the writing. So out of 10... I would say It's a 6. I don't think it's badly written. I mean, I wonder if Steve Englehart is pulling our leg with the teaching. I mean, I don't think that's his philosophy in life.
He's pulling something.
And he did a good job of tying in all these heroes and giving them their voices, etc. So, you know, I will give the writing a 6. I think it's, you know, 6 for effort.
Right. I'm going to give it a 4 because I found it dull, boring, and confusing. Probably because I didn't have the tie-in issues and the main series itself, I think, was a bit of a mess. I mean, yes, I tip my hat to them for doing a weekly series, but I don't think it's a great story. I think the Manhunter stuff was tacked on just because I needed a bad guy. Issue 5 is the worst one, and it goes downhill from there for me. I do like the diverse mix of people that get chosen to become the next generation of metahumans, but then when they finally get their new powers and abilities, you're kind of like, really? Gloss? Anyway, yeah, so I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah, at the end it looks like all the good names are taken, doesn't it? A 4. Okay.
Yes. As for art and covers, I'm going to give it a 6. I think the art's fine. There are some really nice superheroic scenes, you know, and lots of big groups of heroes standing around doing stuff. But it's very of its time, and there's nothing that really stood out to me and made me go, wow. So I think it's fine. It's nothing spectacular. It does the job. So a 6.
Oh, okay. I think, I'm with you. I think it's the same. I think a solid 6. Joe Staton does a great job on the covers. Ian Gibson, inks it all real well. It doesn't look like it's, super rushed. So it looks like it was done with a bit of lead time. Because as it goes on, it maintains its quality.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not George Perez.
No.
But it's better than I draw. So right. On a scale of Perez to me, it's more in the Perez end.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And Impact Legacy. It fell pretty flat for Impact Legacy. I would say. I can't think of much that came from this that really stuck around. And the book itself has sort of, I mean, they released a trade, which is why you got my issues, because I've got the trade. Mm-hmm. And I bought that because it's a DC event. It has significance in itself. But nothing really lasted from this. No one ever talked about these characters again. Nope. Special points to Steve Orlando for bringing back Extrano, the gay Peruvian character, and using him much more effectively in the Midnighter series, Midnighter and Apollo. So good on him. But the more we learn about Steve Orlando, the more we realize that he just loves these old characters and loves to bring them back and surprise people or, make people go, who's that? Yes. In most cases. So, I mean, this one isn't on Comixology. You can't get the trade anymore. It's fallen by the wayside a bit, and I don't think anyone thinks it's that important anymore. So I will give it a 3 on that base. 3 out of 10 for Legacy and Impact. Oh, I feel like such a bastard.
Well, hold my beer, because I'm giving it a 1.
What?
I cannot think of anything from this event other than the New Guardians that came out of this or had an effect on the DCU. It happens and then it's gone. No one talks about Millennium anymore, and there's a reason for that, because it's shit. Apologies to the creative team. I'm sure at the time it was well received initially. They got paid for doing their job. Yay. But 1 for Impact Legacy.
Oh dear.
Excuse me while I go all Simon Cowell. Anyway, who's our semi-OCD this week?
Our semi-OCD this week is Ted Kilvington from the Justice Trek podcast, which is a really good podcast where he looks at issues with members of his family who are much more jaded than him about comics.
Right.
So I quite enjoy his show. It's very good. He gave us some deep thoughts on Millennium. So here we go. To be short and sweet, I liked Millennium because it was well-organized, with most of the tie-ins directly referencing and in some cases even furthering the thematic and philosophical points. Some of the tie-ins, like Week 4's issues of Captain Atom, Suicide Squad, Detective Comics and The Spectre, even tied into each other to make for an even deeper reading experience. While the philosophical aspects aren't exactly Confucian or Socratic, it was refreshing to have such a slugfest event attempt something that deep. 30 years later, we still rarely see such ambition in crossover series. So, eventiness, the 8-issue main series and the 37 tie-ins dominated the DCU for a couple of months. The scope of the series was interplanetary with, in theory, a large impact on the future of humanity. Of course, the latter part didn't pan out, in part because DC, rightly or wrongly, wouldn't let Englehart execute his post-series vision. Still, it was a large canvas upon which many intriguing twists and turns were brought to light. So I give it a score of 6. 6 for eventiness. Ooh. Okay. So... higher than you or I. For writing, Steve Englehart has always been known as a tight plotter who is able to dive deep into continuity, and it was refreshing that he was able to do so while respecting the changes wrought by the Crisis on Infinite Earths. The story was complete in the main series, yet the narrative was so much richer when filled out by the tie-ins. There you go, Mike. And the majority of which were not superfluous. And there were genuine moments of pathos, such as the death of Salima Barinznar. I think there was the death of the lady in Iran, which Blue Beetle tried to prevent, who was one of the chosen who didn't make it into the group, sadly. Mm. So he gave it a score of 9.
Ooh.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. Higher than us as well. Artistry. On the one hand, it was an impressive achievement that Joe Staton and Ian Gibson were able to handle 8 consecutive weekly issues themselves. On the other hand, the art did seem rushed, and neither of them appeared to be turning in their best work. But the layouts were adequate, even if the pencils and inks were not always. Ian Gibson's finishes seemed to overpower Staton's usually distinctive rendering, and Gibson was not really suited to mainstream superhero crossovers. Yeah, he did a lot of 2000 AD work.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave it a 4 for art.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, below us for art. Interesting. Impact Legacy. The series was not a fixer, as was Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it was not about cleaning up continuity, nor was it a launcher, as was Legends, which launched Justice League and Suicide Squad. Manhunter and New Gardens were more spin-offs, and it could be considered an Englehart vanity project, but his star was not so bright in 1987 that DC would have centered their entire autumn around indulging his whims. So while I enjoy the series, your criteria leaves us with one option, Occupier. I love it when he refers to our criteria.
Mm.
Yeah.
We are the trendsetters, the tastemakers.
We are so now. Based on ambition and scope, I give the series an 8 for intended impact legacy. However, the execution of the ambition was weak, as Englehart only wrote 2 post-millennium issues each of Green Lantern Corps and New Guardians, and didn't work for DC again until late 1992's Conquerilla miniseries. Wow.
Wow.
I'll only come back for Conquerilla. Thus, I give the series a 2 for actual impact and legacy, and overall I'm going to average them down to a score of 5 between the ambition and the actual.
Okay.
5. So, out of a possible score of 40, I give it a 24. Not great, but not as bad as most people make it out to be. Oh, thanks, Ted. So, we're going to take your 24, and we're going to halve it to give us a total out of 100. So, your 24 becomes 12, which gives us a score of... Let's see, we've got 14 from you, 20 from me, and 12 from Ted. That gives us 46.
Ooh.
46. Mm. So, Millennium, the third event to come out from DC in DC OCD, is the third ranked event. So we're going in order. We've got Crisis at the top, and then we've got Legends, and then we have Millennium. So 46 Millennium. Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh. So that's technically a fail.
You don't say. Oh, dear. No, I think, yeah, okay, I'll stop. I think it's a fair score. Yeah. Stopping now.
Okay. But we did get some feedback on our last episode. We received an email from Chris Franklin from Supermates podcast and the JLU cast, the new one about the Justice League United cartoon. And he said, hello, Paul, Mike, and Dr. Herb and Onion. Great show and legends. Overall, I think this series still holds up, but yes, it is a bit vague about how much Godfrey is stirring up the populace, and he does rise and fall very quickly. Of course, then there are the gaffes when no one in the Bat office knew what he looked like, despite the fact that he was just Kirby's glorious Godfrey in a three-piece suit and a pair of glasses. The Superman tie-ins were great, and of course, influenced later stories like the great Superman animated series finale, Legacy. I do agree with Dr. Ange that this series going small was the right approach after the epoch-making events of Crisis. And, of course, at one point the series was called Crisis of the Soul when it was in the hands of Paul Levitz and Jerry Ordway. I can't wait to see what you have to say about Millennium. Hoo boy. Thank you, Chris.
And now hoo you know boy indeed, Chris. Hoo boy indeed.
So... yeah, I want you all to head over to Comicosity and look at the podcast section, and you will see the ladder with the latest score in there, and you can sort the scores against the events and stuff. And with three down, there's not much sorting to do because they're all in the same order as the number that they've come out.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll be mixing things up with some higher scores or lower scores that start to make the ladder more complex and interesting. So it's over at Comicosity, which is a fantastic site for comic information and nothing else.
Yes.
Anyway, we will be back next week with a Waiting for Doom, I believe. And then when we come back after that, next time on DCOCD, controversially, we will be doing Cosmic Odyssey. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you want to get in touch, you can reach us on Twitter at DCOCDcast. And if you want to send us an email about the show, DCOCDcast@gmail.com. But thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
All right. Catch you all next time. Bye.
See ya.